Welcome to SCOTUSCAST, Non-Signatory Arbitration Post-Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Monday, May 4th, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Arthur Andersen v. Carlisle. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether the Federal Arbitration Act allows federal courts to issue and review denial of Section 3 orders to stay claims pending arbitration against non-signatories to an arbitration agreement. In a 6-3 decision delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held that a litigant not signatory to an arbitration agreement may invoke Section 3 provided the agreement is otherwise enforceable under the relevant contract law, and that any denial of such a motion is appealable, reversing the Sixth Circuit decision below. To discuss the decision, we welcome O'Melveny and Myers partner Brian Brooks. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Brooks.
Hello, and thanks very much for joining this podcast on the important Supreme Court decision in Arthur Andersen versus Carlisle. Carlisle, like a number of Supreme Court cases, is on its surface about a seemingly simple question of jurisdiction, but in fact cuts much more deeply than that in the area of arbitration claims under the Federal Arbitration Act. The background of Carlisle involves a circuit split over a fairly technical question of jurisdiction under the Arbitration Act. The question specifically presented is whether, when a court has denied an arbitration request by a non-signatory to the relevant arbitration agreement, is that a denial of a stay of arbitration within the meaning of Section 3 of the Arbitration Act, such as to be available for immediate interlocutory review? That sounds like a very technical question, but in fact, as the opinion makes clear, the court is getting at a much deeper issue on the merits of the scope of the Federal Arbitration Act. More about that in a moment. The way to think about the case at the outset, of course, is to look at the circuit split that generated the case and also to look at the vote among the justices that resulted. Let's start with the vote just for a moment. This is one of those very rare cases where liberals and conservatives find themselves on both sides of the decision. In a 6-3 vote, the opinion for the court was written by Justice Scalia and joined by Justices Kennedy, Thomas, Ginsburg, Breyer, and Alito. Scalia and Kennedy are not common adherents with Justice Ginsburg and Justice Breyer, and so that's interesting right there. But on the dissenting side, you have Justice Souter writing an opinion in which the Chief Justice and Justice Stevens also joined. That's interesting in itself as a matter of politics, but also interesting because one of the cases that gave rise to the circuit split being decided in the case was a case from the D.C. Circuit written by then-Judge Roberts, now the Chief Justice of the United States. The dispute that gave rise to the Andersen case is a very fundamental structure of a dispute in the world of arbitration. What happened was two commercial parties, a construction contractor and an accounting firm, Arthur Andersen, entered into a series of tax strategies designed to minimize the taxes of the Andersen client. As part of that tax strategy, Andersen introduced the client to a third-party investment manager who was going to make available certain tax loss opportunities that the construction contractor would then use to offset its tax amounts due. As part of the investment management agreement, the construction contractor signed an arbitration agreement with the investment manager. And of course, as Justice Scalia points out in the opinion, as with many things that look too good to be true, the investment scheme went south. And so the construction contractor decided to file suit. Now, being crafty, the contractor realized that it had an arbitration agreement with the investment manager, and so it decided not to sue the investment manager at all. It instead sued Arthur Andersen and all of the other parties that were part of the broader strategy, but that were not themselves signatories to the arbitration agreement. When the case was filed in federal court, the initial response of Arthur Andersen was to move to stay the proceedings and to compel arbitration of the dispute. And the construction contractor quite plausibly argued that because it had not signed an arbitration agreement with Arthur Andersen, but only with the investment manager, who was not a party, Andersen had no rights to arbitrate the dispute. So the district court, reviewing the motion to compel arbitration, decided that because Arthur Andersen was not a party to the arbitration agreement, arbitration could not be granted, and thus denied Arthur Andersen's motion to stay and to compel arbitration. In doing so, the district court on that issue alone departed from the decisions of most other circuits in the country, which have held that under principles of equitable estoppel and other contract doctrine, that non-signatories in appropriate cases can enforce arbitration agreements in disputes that arise out of a transaction that involves the arbitration agreement even when they're not the specific party thereto. That was a decision where the Sixth Circuit was principally supported only by one other Circuit Court of Appeals case. That would be the D.C. Circuit's decision that then-Judge Roberts had written. Now, what happened that gave rise to the appeal in the case was a question of jurisdiction. Immediately upon losing its motion to compel arbitration in the district court, Arthur Andersen invoked Section 16 of the Federal Arbitration Act, which is an exception to the usual rule that only final judgments can be appealed to the federal courts of appeal. Section 16 of the FAA says that an order denying a stay of proceedings pending arbitration can be immediately appealed to the circuit court. And so the question presented to the Sixth Circuit was not, strictly speaking, whether the district court's denial of arbitration was correct. It was instead the jurisdictional question of whether that denial constituted a denial of a stay pursuant to the FAA. On that question, the Sixth Circuit held that it was not, and concluded that because the underlying arbitration was not allowed because it was being invoked by a non-signatory, there therefore was no denial of arbitration within the meaning of the statute, and therefore held that there was no jurisdiction to entertain an interlocutory appeal under Section 16. When the Supreme Court took up the case, they cut through what appeared to be a conflating of the jurisdictional question on the one hand with the merits question on the other hand. And what became clear in the Supreme Court's decision in the Andersen versus Carlisle case is that both the Sixth Circuit and the three dissenting justices let their views of the underlying merits of the arbitration right taint their views of the jurisdictional analysis. And on this point, the Supreme Court was quite evocative in its writing. What the Supreme Court said is that even a frivolous request for arbitration, an arbitration as to which there is no plausible argument at all, nonetheless may be appealed under Section 16 of the FAA because the nature of the underlying denial, not the merits of the underlying denial, give rise to jurisdiction. And so according to the Supreme Court, regardless of how implausible the request for arbitration is, if the district court denies the request, that is an issue that is appealable as a matter of jurisdiction. But the Supreme Court then went on to say that that would not be a very satisfying resolution to the case if they didn't go ahead and give a preview of the merits of the request for arbitration on remand. And this is where the case really gets interesting. What the Supreme Court said here is that the dissenting justices and the Sixth Circuit misinterpreted the nature of the arbitration right under the Federal Arbitration Act. Both the Sixth Circuit and the dissenting justices in the case reasoned that the FAA's scope of appealability and indeed scope of enforceability of the underlying agreements was a question of federal law, and reasoned that the FAA was permitting arbitration and appeals only relating to written arbitration agreements. And of course, there was no written arbitration agreement directly between Arthur Andersen and the construction contractor. What the six-justice majority ruled, consistent with most of the circuit courts that had looked at the issue before, was that in fact what the FAA simply does is put arbitration agreements on the same footing as a matter of state law with any other contract. In other words, the FAA did not intend to create a substantive body of enforceability law with respect to arbitration agreements. It merely intended to tear down any state doctrines or laws that would disadvantage arbitration agreements relative to all other contracts. The Supreme Court majority therefore reasoned that if a state contract doctrine would allow enforcement by a third party of a contract on grounds of equitable estoppel or third-party beneficiary, for example, then an arbitration agreement could be enforced under those third-party theories just as much as any other contract. On that simple ground, the court concluded that this case not only was subject to jurisdiction for the reasons discussed before, but also was a case that was as arbitrable by the non-signatory party, Arthur Andersen, as any other contract would have been in similar circumstances involving a non-signatory to that kind of a contract. In that sense, the Supreme Court has now made very clear that the FAA does not intend to create a substantive body of enforceability law for arbitration agreements, but merely intends to respect state law doctrines on the enforceability of arbitration contracts like all other contracts. In closing, one of the more intriguing bits of the case as well, which is worth some review, is that this case came down the same month as the case that will be the subject of another podcast called Vaden. And what's interesting there is that in this decision, the Chief Justice, Roberts, appears to take a fairly anti-arbitration position, reading the FAA very narrowly and providing only parsimonious enforceability of arbitration agreements by third parties, whereas in Vaden, the Chief Justice comes out on the pro-arbitration side of things. For that reason alone, it's worth listening to the other podcast, although Vaden is on a very different subject. But for the time being, it is believed by litigators who do commercial and consumer litigation involving arbitration that Anderson versus Carlisle is one of the most important cases on the subject to come down in the last 5 years, because it makes quite clear that third parties have as much of a right to enforce arbitration agreements as the parties themselves do, to the extent provided by state law. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.